In 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 9, 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 9, it says, "But you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's special possession, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of this darkness into his wonderful light." So it's clear here that God sees us as a royal priesthood. Now that's a leadership position. And the reason he has called us and chosen us and given us that commission to be a royal priesthood is in that verse. The second half of the verse says why. It's not because of anything wonderful that we've done, but it's for a great purpose that he has determined that we need to be that royal priesthood, because it says there that you may declare the praises of him. So that's the reason. So that we, as the royal priesthood, may declare the praises of him who has called us out of darkness into his wonderful light. It's a position of leadership. It's a position of influence that we've been called to. What is leadership? What is leadership? Since we are called to leadership, it's important that we know what leadership is. There's been an enormous amount of research into the topic of leadership over the years. But at its essence, leadership is influencing people. That's what it is. Simple as that. Leadership is influencing people. So my question for you today, and my question for me today, are you an influencer of people? Are you an influencer of people? Am I an influencer of people? Do people see something in you and me that will lead them to Jesus Christ? That will lead them to the way, the truth, and the light? Jesus Christ. Let's sharpen our insight into this topic of leadership, brethren. And let's renew our determination to influence people. You see, there's a common misconception. Many people believe that you have to be someone, you know, of authority in order to be a leader or to lead people, to influence people. You've got to have some kind of a position. You've got to be a parent, or a boss, or a king, or a queen, or a C-suite executive, or a mayor, or a pastor, someone in authority. You've got to be that person in that role to lead or to influence. But really, if all of us stop and think for a while, many of us have been influenced by a complete stranger. Just out of the blue, one day, some encounter that we have with a stranger, we think, wow, what a great example. And it influences, it leaves an indelible mark in us. Maybe a friend influences us in some way. Maybe a child influences us. We see an example of a characteristic, a behavior pattern in a child, and we think, wow, that's something I could learn from. Maybe someone who works for us displays this. Maybe it's a greeter in a wheelchair at the entrance of a store that influences us. See, everyone is a leader. Everyone is an influencer. Leadership is not just for people in designated offices. Leadership is for everyone. And God has called us to be a royal priesthood. We're going to be kings in his kingdom. Certainly people who have a position or a title have that much more of a responsibility to lead. But how about an elderly person who is humble and quiet, a quiet member of the church? But this person always just offers a smile. Just offers a smile or a word of encouragement. That's leadership. That's influencing people. Or how about a young person who shows respect for elders and always wants to help? That's leadership. That's influencing people. We all have the opportunity to influence each other for the good and to influence people outside for the good. And God wants us to do that. He wants us to be a light to the world. His light shining through us. Matthew 5 and verse 14 to 16. Speaking to his disciples, Jesus Christ is talking to, remember, these are just 12 ordinary men at this stage. These are not leaders. These are just ordinary people like you and me that he's talking to. And he says, "You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all in the house." And this is the key point he's making here. "In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify God in heaven." See, the disciples weren't yet leaders, but they were to become leaders. We're to become leaders. What better way to become leaders than to practice leadership? Every day. Every day, in every way, in every interaction with everyone, to practice it. We're called to be lights shining among men. How are we doing? How are we doing? How did we do yesterday? How did we do today? Peter was inspired to explain this even further in 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 12. 1 Peter 2 and verse 12. And I'm reading from the Amplified version here, because I think it really brings out the meaning more. It says, "Keep your behavior excellent among the unsaved Gentiles. Conduct yourself honorably with graciousness and integrity, so that for whatever reason they may slander you as evil doers, yet by observing your good deeds they may instead come to glorify God." You see, the people around us are going to perceive certain actions and things that we say from time to time in a negative light, because Satan's trying to get at us and he's going to spark those negative thoughts in the people around us, and they're going to be suspicious of our motives, or they're going to be jealous, or whatever the situation is. And they're going to perceive certain things that we do and say as negative. So it's important that our good deeds should shine out way in excess and counterbalance and supersede any of those negative impressions. Jesus Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. So he sets the standard. He showed us the behaviors that we should have and how we should influence people. And he did it by influencing people himself. See, he's the perfect example of a leader influencing positively people around him. Against all odds, as we know, the religious leaders were against him. They tried to discredit him. They were trying to take him out, trying to silence him all the time. But he just kept on with the right behaviors, the right attitude, the right influence, a positive influence all the time. His eternal example continues to shine out to all humanity through the pages of the Bible. As mentioned earlier, leadership has been studied for decades, and many books have been written. One interesting area of research gave rise to a book called Servant Leadership by an author called Robert Greenleaf. Robert Greenleaf. This was in 1977. So way back in 1977, long before some of the children in this room were born. We'll be referring to this book and a few other books as we go through the rest of this material. But first, let's see what Jesus said in Matthew 20. Matthew 20, verse 25 to 28. Matthew 20, again, discussing leadership with his disciples, he said, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and those who are great exercise authority over them. Yet it shall not be so among you. Whoever desires to become great among you, let him be your servant. And whoever desires to be first among you, let him be your slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many." So here, Jesus is clearly saying that the way to be a leader is to be a servant. And he's not just saying that, you know, and not doing it. He's doing it. He's telling them that I have come to serve. And so much so that I'm going to give my life in service. So this phrase, servant leadership, has become a buzz phrase in churches and in businesses and non-profit organizations pretty much since the writing of the book in 1977 by Greenleaf. And of course, a lot of the academics, you know, wanted to discredit it straight away because it was religious. And so they raised all sorts of criticisms against it. But it's managed to weather through all of that, and it's still very much a piece of studies in leadership to this day. But Christ-like leadership is more than a textbook. I'm not decrying the textbook that he wrote. It's a great textbook. But Christ-like leadership is far more than a list of do's and don'ts in terms of a way of behaving. It really comes down to really studying the life of Jesus as documented for us in the Holy Scriptures and making that part of us. That's really what it's all about. Learning how to lead, how to influence people, is learning how to be like Jesus. That's what it's about. There are four foundational points to servant leadership that are really important to remember. And we'll go through them one at a time. The first one is a Christ-like leader is a leader. It might sound, duh, that sounds, yeah. But stay with me. The reason I'm saying that is because so many people, when they hear about servant leadership and they hear about, you know, Christ-like leadership, they get to a point where they get confused. And they start thinking that, well, if I'm going to be a leader, I've just got to be this really humble person, and I've just got to listen to what everyone else is saying and kind of go with it, like almost like a democracy and a majority vote, and then plot a course that takes everyone along that direction. It's a common pitfall that people can fall into. They can start thinking that, yeah, although it's called leadership, what it really is all about is being very humble and, you know, asking people for their opinion and then going with the majority rule. Well, that's not what leadership's all about. We don't see Jesus doing that. That's not what Jesus modeled. That's not the behavior that he modeled. He did bring his team along with him at all times. He talked to them all the time. He communicated with them. He corrected them. He mentored them. You know, he wasn't like a dictator sitting above the people and just dictating orders. He was with them. He walked with them. He talked to them all the time. He was humble. He did display that, but he was a leader. So that's really that first point, is a Christ-like leader is a leader. So it's really, let's not go off on the wrong tangent here and start just emphasizing the humility and start downplaying the fact that there's leadership required. There's leadership required. And actually going with the majority rule is probably not a good idea. It's good to hear everyone's opinion, but going with the majority is often a slippery slope. The second point about servant leadership, and by the way, these 4 points come out of the church's working papers around this topic of servant leadership. So these 4 points are not something that Derek made up. It comes out of the United Church of God documentation on servant leadership. So the second point is that a servant leader is focused on human relationships. Human relationships. One of the other authors who has written books on this type of leadership, the style of leadership, is someone called Max Dupree. We would probably pronounce it Max Dupree in South Africa, but anyway. Max, P-R-E-E. He had a book, Leadership is an Art, is what the name of his book was. And it was about a decade after Greenleaf's book. Anyway, Max Dupree says that the goal of thinking hard about leadership is not to produce great or charismatic or well-known leaders. The signs of outstanding leadership appear primarily among the followers. So if you want to know if someone's a good leader, you don't necessarily look at the leader. You look at the followers of the leader. Are the followers reaching their potential? Are they learning? Are they serving? Do they achieve the required results? Do they change with grace? That's an interesting one. Are the followers changing graciously? Do they manage conflict? That's another really interesting one, isn't it? So you look at the followers and you say, okay, do they get along? Are they changing? Is there grace? Can you see graciousness in the way they behave towards each other and towards others? Are they learning? If all of those are yes, you're probably looking at a really good leader. James chapter 1 and verse 27 is a frequently quoted verse that's often ignored in daily practice. Like so many things, we read over and kind of don't get it. Sometimes we just ignore it. But James 1:27 says, pure and undefiled religion before God and the Father is this: to visit orphans and widows in their trouble and to keep oneself unspotted from the world. So again, this point that we're making here is that a servant leader is focused on human relationships. Now, if you're focused on human relationships, the first point that comes out of James 1:27 is that every member in a congregation has a responsibility to help those in need. And how can we help them if we don't know them? How can we help them if we don't know them? We have to have relationships with each other. We have to understand each other. Understand each other's backstory. What makes you tick? What makes me tick? That's when we can really understand each other's needs and be gracious towards each other. The second point that comes out of this, being unspotted from the world, it's very important that we humbly seek God's guidance so that our priorities aren't based on society's values. So when we create these relationships with each other, when we build these relationships, it gets done in the right way, in a way that conforms to the way that God thinks, not the way the rest of society thinks. The third point regarding servant leadership and influencing people is that a servant leader must be accessible. Must be accessible. Jesus was a great example of that. Let's look at Luke 18. Luke 18, verse 35 to 47. Luke 18, 35 to 47. And he drew near Jericho. A blind man was sitting by the roadside begging. Hearing a multitude going by, he inquired what this meant. They told him, "Jesus of Nazareth is passing by." And he cried, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." And those who were in front rebuked him, telling him to be silent. But he cried out all the more. You can imagine Jesus going through this crowd, noisy crowd, talking at the top of their voices. This man's crying out from the side there. Probably didn't hear him the first time. Maybe didn't hear him the second time even. And those that did hear him just said, "Hush." Bothering the master. But he said, "No, Son of David, have mercy on me." He shouts all the louder. Jesus hears now. He hears and he stops. And he commands him to be brought to him. When he came near, he says, "What do you want me to do for you? What do you want me to do for you?" And he said, "Lord, let me receive my sight." And Jesus said to him, "Receive your sight. Your faith has made you well." Immediately he received his sight and followed him, glorifying God. And all the people, when they saw it, gave praise to God. Now here we see Jesus hearing him shouting, stopping, and asking the question, "What do you want me to do?" That's an example to us. We mustn't assume that we know what a person wants. We must try and understand their story, understand where they are, and ask them, "How can I help you?" Maybe it's just to pray for them. That's at least what we can do, is to pray. It's an important principle of Christ-like leadership. Being accessible. Being accessible. Being available. Making yourself available to everyone. The fourth and final principle of servant leadership and of influencing people and setting the right example, behaving in a way that others see and glorify God, and then they want to learn to live that way themselves, is a servant leader makes sacrifices. A servant leader makes sacrifices. Jesus used himself as the example when he said to those who would become the first apostles in the church, "Whoever desires to be first among you, let him be your slave, just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." It's vital that a servant leader nurtures his private life as well. So having said, yes, we must be available and we must make sacrifices, tempering those statements with the fact that we do need to take time out to recharge our batteries. Because if we burn out, we can't do anything. We can't be a servant to others if we burn out. Jesus himself took time out to restore himself. Let's look in Mark chapter 6. Mark 6 and verse 46 to 47. So remember, this is after he's fed this huge crowd and they took up 12 baskets full of broken pieces of fish and loaves. And actually starting in 45, immediately he made his disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side, to Bethsaida, while he dismissed the crowd. And after he'd taken leave of them, that is the crowd, he went up on the mountain to pray. So he took time out. He must have been exhausted. Just imagine dealing with a massive crowd like that, speaking to them, and then taking time out to recharge his batteries, to spend time alone with God. And when evening came, the boat was out on the sea and he was alone on the land. And then, of course, we know what happened. He walks out to the boat. But the key here is that a servant leader must make sacrifices but must also recharge batteries, just as Jesus did. Don't burn out, because then no one is going to benefit from you. You won't benefit from you either. So Christ-like leadership is more than a textbook list of things to do and things not to do. So, you know, Greenleaf's book is excellent. It's well worth reading. But really the key is looking at the life of Jesus Christ and how he lived, the example that he set. And as we study Jesus' life, it becomes clear that he led by example. He influenced people by the way he was, by the things he did, by the example he set. A great example of that is the night of his betrayal, the Last Supper. He took a basin and he washed his disciples' feet. Now, he could have said to his disciples, "Hey, boys, in the future, you know, we're changing some of the symbols around Passover and unleavened bread time, and in future I want you to wash each other's feet. You got that? Okay, let's move on. Let's talk about the next item of business." He could have just told them. But he didn't do that, did he? He took off his outer garments, he wrapped a towel around himself, he went and he got water, and he went and did it. He set the actual example himself. You know, Peter tried to stop him. The lowly duty of washing feet. And when Jesus finished, he turned to them and said, and this is in John 13, if you want to turn there, John 13, verse 12 to 17. He said, "Do you know what I've done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you say, 'Well, for so I am.'" So here he's saying, look, I know, I am your leader. I am your rabbi. And you giving me the respect for that office is good, because, you know, it's fitting. "But if I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I've given you an example that you should do as I've done to you. Most assuredly, I say to you, a servant is not greater than his master, nor is he who is sent greater than he who sent him. If you know these things, blessed are you if you do them." So he's clearly telling us, through to this day, that we need to serve. We need to have an attitude of service. We need to lead by example. We need to influence by example. You know, a good leader won't ask his followers to do something that he's not willing to do himself. A good leader won't say, hey, I want you to do this, and then not be willing to do it themselves. The credibility of a teacher is enhanced or worsened by the lifestyle of the teacher. Children learn behavior by mimicking their adults and their parents and other children. One of the most important ways that a father can fulfill his role as a leader in the family is the example, the behavior that is modeled. The Apostle Paul wrote a letter to a minister named Titus. Let's look in Titus 2, verse 1 to 6. Titus 2, verse 1 to 6. Titus is giving practical Christian characteristics that Paul is giving Titus, practical Christian characteristics. And actually, let's skip down to verse 7. So in verse 1 to 6, he's giving these characteristics. But in 7 and 8, after explaining to Titus what he should be teaching, Paul explains to him what he must be doing as an effective teacher. So, you know, here's a list of things, but here's what you should do. Here's how you should behave, you, Titus. It says, in all things, showing yourself to be a pattern of good works. In doctrine, showing integrity, reverence, incorruptibility, sound speech that cannot be condemned, that one who's an opponent may be ashamed, having nothing evil to say of you. So he's talking here about a pattern of good works. That's behaviors. How do we behave? How do I behave? How do you behave? Is it like Jesus? Are we modeling and therefore influencing others to live the way that Jesus lived? Of course, Jesus didn't do good works in order to put the spotlight on himself, and neither should we. It's not about, look how great I am. No. It's always humility is the underlying emotion, the underlying drive, the underlying attitude. Remember what we said earlier in Matthew 5 and verse 16. We're just repeating it here. Jesus taught, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. So, as disciples of Christ, brethren, we must never forget that our goal is to help others to become disciples. Jesus' example of leadership is based on that principle of leading by example. Peter, in 1 Peter 2, verse 21, says, for to this you were called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow his steps. So if we want to think about how are we influencing others, the measuring stick that we should always use is the life of Jesus Christ. We should always be thinking about how did he influence everyone around him? Are we doing it in the same way? Are we doing it in the same way? And then it's good to think about those four basic principles that we talked about, just quickly recapping them. The first one is that a leader is a leader. A Christ-like leader is a leader. So we're not saying you just become someone who is facilitating the public opinion. No, a leader is a leader. The second point was a servant leader is focused on human relationships because people matter. People is what it's all about. The third one was a servant leader must be accessible. So you can't be aloof and far away from everyone. You've got to walk alongside people. And the fourth one is that a servant leader makes sacrifices. Makes sacrifices, but at the same time takes time out to restore yourself so that you don't burn out. So four really important points to remember as we think about the life of Jesus Christ, and we can see how he modeled a lot of that himself. Now let's switch gears just slightly here for a moment. And let's think about, are there any current day human examples of leadership that immediately come to mind? Where you'd say, you know, there's some interesting characteristics that that person has demonstrated in their life over the years that are servant leadership characteristics that we could learn from. People in our day and age that we have seen. Well, one such individual, in my humble opinion, is Queen Elizabeth II. Queen Elizabeth II, she's been in the news a lot lately with her recent passing. And reading through some of the reports, it's striking. Some of the comments that she made during her life and some of the things that she did have been really good examples as far as servant leadership is concerned. Even as far back as when she was a princess before she became the queen, she was in South Africa. She was in Cape Town. She was 21 years old. And she gave an address to the nation and to the rest of the Commonwealth. And she said, "I declare before you all that my whole life, whether it be long or short, shall be devoted to your service and to the service of our great imperial family to which we all belong." She meant it all the way up until the last couple of days before she died. She was carrying out her service. She appointed the incoming Prime Minister, Liz Truss. That was her last official duty, just 48 hours, I think it was, before she died. Incredible sense of duty, incredible sense of service to the nation, fulfilling her role. You know, her official titles are very interesting as well, and especially when you think that the royal family is the direct descendants of David, King of Israel. And guess who else comes into that lineage? Jesus Christ is of the lineage of King David. And Jesus Christ is the soon coming King of Kings. And he will sit on the same throne that the Queen was coronated on, the Stone of Scone. As we would say in English, the Stone of Scone, S-C-O-N-E, is the stone that Jacob was sleeping on when he had the dream in Bethel, and he saw the staircase and he anointed the stone. Anyway, the Queen, her official title is Queen Elizabeth II by the grace of God. Important phrase there. This is the whole title here, but by the grace of God is the second phrase straight after her name. So there's a recognition of the office that's been given to her. Queen of this realm and of other realms and territories, head of the Commonwealth, and then another very important phrase, which is very much apropos to all of us as well. It applies to us. This phrase is defender of the faith. Defender of the faith. As a leader, as an influencer, we've got to be prepared to defend the faith. When someone comes to us and says, why do you keep the Sabbath? Isn't that Jewish? We've got to have, okay, I can defend the faith on that. I can help you. I can tell you why. The queen, of course, was born into royalty. She fulfilled that calling all the way to her last days. She had to navigate through troubled waters. Her family were an embarrassment. Lots of scandals. She had to navigate through all of that. And she did. She endeared herself to her subjects and even beyond her subjects. If you look at all the accolades that have been flooding in since news of her death, they come from people way outside of the British Commonwealth. Brethren, we too must navigate through rough waters in our lives. Jesus said, if they've hated me, they're going to hate you. Just as the disciples were called out to be trained as influencers, we have also been called out to be trained as influencers. And we are royalty in training. We're royalty in training. And as such, we have to practice every day influencing others. You know, the Queen was not known for talking about her religious beliefs. She just modeled a way of life. But every now and then she'd say something. And interestingly, in December 2000, she made this statement in her annual message. She said, to many of us, our beliefs are of fundamental importance. For me, the teachings of Christ and my own personal accountability before God provide a framework in which I try to lead my life. I, like so many of you, have drawn great comfort in difficult times from Christ's words and example. That paragraph right there is just what we've been talking about, isn't it? It's just what we've been talking about. Personal accountability before God. Remembering one of the pieces of her title was by the grace of God that she has that title. And that she wanted to follow Christ's example. There's another account that I read just recently about the Queen and something that she said. She was talking to one of her chaplains at one point, and she said, oh, how I wish that the Lord would come in my lifetime. The chaplain asked, why does Your Majesty feel this very earnest desire? And her answer was, with quivering lips and her whole countenance lighted up by deep emotion, she said, I should so love to lay my crown at His feet. What an example. What an example. Brethren, of how much more importance is our calling? Our calling. We've been given such an amazing opportunity to learn to be leaders, to learn to influence people. So I ask again, are you an influencer of people? Am I an influencer of people? Are we influencing people? Do people see something in us when they look at us? Not just here within the church body as we look at each other, but as we go out into the world, when people look at us, do they see something that will lead them to Jesus Christ? Do they see something that will lead them to the way, the truth, and the light? If we've fallen short in this commission, brethren, then it's not too late. Now's the time. Now's the time. How do you and I show up in the lives of those around us? Let's ask God each day to help us to influence positively everyone with whom we come into contact. Indeed, let's ask Him to bring people into our lives each day that He wants us to influence. He can arrange that. To bring us in contact with those He wants us to reach with His great love, demonstrating the right behaviors and influencing them to find out more. He will provide the wisdom, He will provide the words, He will provide the tone of voice, He will provide the expression in our face. He wants to influence other people through us. He will provide. What a daily opportunity we have. What a minute-by-minute opportunity we have. With every person we interact with, we have an opportunity to influence and to lead many sons and daughters to glory.